guys, this is John
and Austin,
and welcome to another episode of the Meatgistics podcast.
I don't like what you did
I stole it from you. Started it off on a little switcheroo there.
Oh, it's all good. It's nice to mix things up every now and then.
So we've got what probably is going to turn into a fairly serious discussion on a couple of things. So first, some levity. I've long said that the double-handed cheese knife's best use is in a war to the death in Walton's. This is what I would probably go with. You can turn it into a long striking device and get people with either the edge of the knife, or this handle's hard too. Or if it's closer, it also kind of works as a shield and you can jab it at people, keep people away. It's a very effective knife. I used to think I'd go with the 404, the meat saw, mm-hmm. the electric meat saw, but I think I'd rather have this.
You want to get into a fight out by the old oak tree later? I'll bring my 45.
Nope.
You bring
No. Only things Walton sells. Now, I know
we sell guns.
Well, not really. We have an FF.
We have
FLA. FFLA.
FFL.
But why is the A in there?
I don't know.
But I know a lot of people are going to be disappointed that I'm not going with the 10-inch butcher's knife, the one that I give away all the time and talk about. Because that is an awesome hand-to-hand combat knife. But this is just more utilitarian, I feel like.
Yeah.
But there is another use for it that I've begun to incorporate it for. And that is the problem of how long it takes to cut up snack sticks into the desired length. This thing works amazingly for that. So what I have here is snack sticks right out of the smoker. I have two of our flexible cutting mats laid down with marks about 7 inches apart each. So I'm just going to ask you to pop back a little bit. And you're going to have to talk them through this as I'm going.
So, yeah, for those that can't see and you're just listening on the podcast, they're just in big, long strands that hung over the smoke sticks. And so he's just taking the cheese knife. Is it a cheese knife?
It's the double-handed cheese knife.
Double-handed cheese knife. And just going straight down through them. I mean, he's cutting through 12, 15 snack sticks at a time. So instead of trying to use a knife and cut a few here or there, I mean, you can cut through the entire set of strands that he had in the smokehouse. What is that, John? Is it probably 12, 15 pounds of meat?
13.
13?
Yeah, because this is what we used yesterday for the live stream to show the difference of mixing. Now, these are fajita snack sticks with no binder.
You lied to me. No. You told me they were taco earlier.
Oh, sorry. I meant fajita. Those are the same things in my mind. These are Mexican snack sticks with no cheese, which I normally don't do. No binder, which I never do. No encapsulated citric acid. And I mixed these, then let them sit overnight, unstuffed, and stuffed them the next day. Because I know some people do that. And I wanted to see how much of extra wear and tear they were putting on their stuffer. How do you think it went?
It couldn't have been as easy as normal. I picture it. It depends on what the mix and the protein extraction was like. I could see it either being
impossible,
or at least difficult to some degree. Because as the meat has all the salt in it and the protein extraction, I mean, it's going to start to set up and get hard.
So first, I will say that with nothing in them, these are excellent. For no cheese, no encapsulated citric acid, no binder, these really came out nice. I'm happy with that for sure. Second, I would say at most, it was 10% harder than normal.
That's crazy.
I literally couldn't believe it. I'm trying to figure it out if it maybe had something to do with half the batch was at like 40 degrees when we were mixing it. So if maybe those didn't get as good a protein extraction and then you mix that in with the rest, I don't know.
Was the texture funky when you were putting it back in the stuffer?
It was a little weird.
Yeah.
It was almost like I'd grab a clump, put it in, and then that clump was clearly separated from the clump below it. And I got some air pockets because of that. I still absolutely recommend that if you're not using a cure accelerator And you're going to hold it to the next day. You stuff and then hold. But when we get this question from time to time, and I always really try to push people like, no, do them both the first day or you're going to have some problems. Turns out not quite as big a problem as I would think, but still recommend it. Now, the real reason for doing that, though, that cheese knife just saved us 10 minutes.
Yeah, you cut all of those in 20 seconds.
Right.
Yeah.
So 13 pounds all into more or less perfectly even. I mean,
yeah, that's
most of them are close. Pretty much perfect. So double-handed cheese knife. I don't even think it's very expensive.
Only three bucks. Payments of $39.99.
It's not that expensive.
But wait.
there is more on the knife front. I want to bring in a cleaver. We currently don't have a cleaver.
And
I
Why?
Feel like that's a mistake.
Is this just for your hand-to-hand combat stuff
that you've been talking about? No. This is because I very clearly see a shot in one of our videos that requires a cleaver. So I was planning on bringing it in.
I don't know. I would assume that Swiss Army or Victorinox, they have one.
They do have one, but it's, if I remember correctly, we stopped carrying it because we didn't sell a ton and they're real pricey.
Like, yeah.
Real pricey.
Yeah, they're going to be expensive.
Why don't I just get one of those like custom Japanese ones? Just have it.
I have no idea.
Just for me.
I guess, I don't know. I have no Ooh. Idea. I've never really looked at anything like that.
Okay. So we've got our Meet Your Six reward systems. We've got the hat with your name on the side, which you're not wearing today, obviously. We've got the cutting board with the Meet Your Six logo and your name. And then we've got that knife at 50. So that's at 500 posts, at 1,000 posts, 1,500 posts. Is there something where we give them like the leader, the non-us leader?
Like whoever is the current post leader gets something?
We'd have to do it probably like every 6 months. Otherwise,
so it's not like they pass it around.
People go back and forth. Oh, okay. Yes, it is that. Yes, it is that.
It just has to be something that you could pass around if you do that.
And if you do that, we'll make a badge. There'll be a badge that you can have as you're the post leader.
Yeah.
It's the best I can come up with.
Like basically a group. So the next to the name where it shows all the other group
exactly.
names.
And only the post leader can be in there. All right. I'll do that. I like it. Because otherwise, like Joe Hell and Tex would just go back and forth. The whole thing would just be shipping something back and forth to them.
Yeah. We also never did anything with our Meet Your Six MVP, which that could maybe be kind of tied into that. However, we
are we talking about the Meet Your Six meat hack thing? So I started a post every month on Meet Your Six where it's like, I propose a problem we all run into on meat processing. And then a bunch of people post their favorite hack or favorite way around that. And then each month I pick one winner and they win something. Last month, because it was the first month we did it, and I had two really good ones. I gave out two, but every month going forward, it's going to be one. And it'll be a little bit smaller of a prize. I don't know where I am on that. I'm probably behind, honestly. So I'll need to look into that, select a winner, and then start a new one. Good snap.
Yeah. I for some reason, I remember the fajita not really being very high on my list, but these are good. I like the flavor, textures, fine. They taste good. My only complaint is the encapsulated citric acid.
Yeah.
I love ECA in snack sticks.
Yeah, could use it for sure. I think what happened is the last time you had the fajita snack sticks, you made them, not me.
And I probably made like three ones. Times the amount of ECA in it as it was required.
Yeah, just burned your tongue off.
It tastes so good that way,
though. It is pretty good that way. I'm going to get these out of our way so we're not reaching all over everything. Why don't you start us off?
Okay. For the first meat matter of the day, we have multiple news stories to kind of go over here, but I won't get into this one too depth because I feel like we talk about it all the time, but since we do talk about it all the time, I want to bring it back up and get another update out there. Is global meat prices. So not only what we're paying like at the grocery store, but overall across everywhere, what are meat prices doing? And obviously they've been trending up, as has a lot of things. But meat prices, even though right now they're about 10% up over last year, like month to month comparison. Good news is, because it feels like all we've talked about is bad news mm-hmm. about meat prices up to this point.
Yep.
The good news is that they're still 14% lower than the peak that we saw back in August of 2014. If you remember back that far, there was, I don't remember what caused it, but I do remember all prices were just nuts. I don't remember. I'm probably going to have to go back through and look through some of my emails to figure out, because we were, my brother and I, Dylan, we were complaining a lot about what the price on this and that was, but we're still 14% lower than meat prices were back then.
They were that bad back then.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
And then another piece of good news along with that, maybe kind of good news, depends on how you want to look at it. Food commodities overall are 40% up year over year. So meat is not growing as fast in prices as the rest of your food products, which is kind of sounds great that, hey, meat's not going up that much. But then you look at it and you're like, well, crap, that means everything else I'm buying at the grocery store is really going nuts right now. So my biggest takeaway from that is it's not as bad as we think on the meat front. It could be worse. And I'm going to start eating even more meat because it's quote unquote cheaper than other food alternatives.
So now when I go to the grocery store, I put my headphones in if I'm going through the checkout line and I tell the lady not to tell me. Like, no, just don't tell me. Like, I don't even want to pay attention to it anymore. It's just my wife and I. And granted, I probably leave with $10 or $15 each time in like bones or something for the dogs. But still, the last one I paid attention to was over $200. And that's for a week. There's a theory that once you start spending over 40% of your income on food and something else, that's when revolutions happen. Like, if you look at the Arab Spring, that's what was going on there. That was like one of their main complaints was everything is getting ridiculously expensive. It's taking all of our money just to keep our families alive. I don't know if we'll end up putting this one on YouTube or not, because I'm going to go down a little bit of a hole here. And this is going to tie into the next thing that we're going to actually two of the next things we're going to talk about. One, that JBS hack.
We can't not talk about that. Yeah.
The JBS hack that came on the heels of the pipeline, mm-hmm. which came on the heels of the insurance hack. Three major things right in a row like that. I played that bit of that podcast for you where the guy said he worked for a major meat processing company. Like, they make machines for the meat industry. And he said that they had just fended off some big hack and they had gotten hit last year and were behind on orders because of that. It seems like our infrastructure is under attack.
Yeah. It's hard to really say for sure, but I mean, it does look like there's a lot of key areas that get hit. And I don't know, did they say for sure who coordinated some of these attacks? I mean, I saw news reports with rumors that it was like Russia.
Right.
But if it is coming from some sort of state-sponsored thing, is that something that we'll see more of? Will we see the food industry, because that is a very key important part for human survival.
Sure.
Will we see the food industry continue to suffer cyber attacks like we've seen here with JBS?
Well, I'll tell you one good thing on it was there's a new meat plant that's being planned to open right in Watertown, New York, specifically because of that JBS attack and the shutdown. There were apparently a group of people who were already talking about doing it. The JBS got shut down. They're like, all right, this is ridiculous. We need to do this really just for safety of the food supply chain, because they were down 3 or 4 days. So not a terribly long time. But even that, just from that, we're seeing a bump. But yeah, I don't know. I see things like that. It makes me super worried. It makes me extremely happy I'm out of New York. Down here am now at least in no way would I call myself a prepper, but I at least am prepared. If something happens, I have firearms. I have a food supply that can last a long time.
You have two dogs that if it came to it, could provide food for you for like 5 years.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they like help defend me.
Oh, no, I'm saying you're turning them into bacon and ham.
I could eat them for sure. I'd feel bad about Riggins. I'd eat Brutus without. What would you make out of them and what seasonings for Walton? So I've heard that dog is a spicy food or hot food, but not like in the way you think when I say hot food. Like it makes you feel hot. Like it raises your body temperature. I don't know. Obviously, I've never eaten dog and I never would, but. You know, never would under normal circumstances. If everything crashes, I'm eating whatever I need to. But I would think probably something sweet. You wouldn't want to eat something hot if it's already going to raise your temperature. So probably something sweet.
That's weird. I don't even know.
Well, I don't know. Patrick asked.
I would just assume I'd just do it like any other wild game. Use a lot of seasoning, a lot of flavor. But, and I say that like I don't want to offend anybody that loves wild game out there, but when I say that, like some wild game is some of the best meat I have ever had in my life. It is amazing. But sometimes when you are tasting wild game from somebody, mm-hmm. and you don't know where it comes from, you don't know how they cleaned it. Maybe it was a gut shot, and then they did a poor job of field dressing it, and it just tastes horrible.
Yep.
You don't get that big up and down in flavor in beef and pork because everything's basically kind of done the same, in my opinion.
You can to a certain degree, but not to the same degree. Yeah, you're absolutely right. But let's make it clear. The backstrap I made for you the other day.
When Kurt was here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You loved that.
That was amazing.
The goose pepperoni, the goose sticks, the deer summer sausage. So as long as it's done correctly.
Yeah, if it's done correctly, it's mm-hmm. it's on par with anything else, the best of everything else out there.
Yeah. Travis Frank, who has the Flush TV show and podcast, always says that to get over somebody's fear of wild game, he has a very specific recipe. He takes, I think it's little chunks of either quail or pheasant breast, wraps them in cream cheese and bacon, and just grill them at that. And he's like, there's no way they cannot like that.
Yeah, you can't turn that down. Right.
Sounds amazing. And then we'll come back to the JBS hack maybe, but the other one that ties into kind of what we were talking about is, yet again, record background checks.
That was really intriguing to me. Not just because of there being record background checks, because I kind of expect that at times. Like, okay, yeah, gun sales are going to be up. We have an FFL, so we dabble in some things, mostly just special order for people we know and people around town here. But it's impossible to get things from our distributor right now. And when I saw this news story, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, record. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not just a record for like this last month or the month before. It's been a record since January of 2020. Every month is setting a new record. Oh. It just keeps going up and up and up and up. And that is what I think is nuts about this whole thing.
So who's buying them?
They may not all be bought, because personally, I just picked up two like a week or two ago. Which I didn't have to pay for. Well, technically I did. I probably spent more money.
You probably spent more money.
I know I probably spent more money.
I should stop complaining about you winning things. You buy a lot more of those tickets than I do.
Yeah. So anybody that doesn't know, I won Gun a Week twice. Actually, once was like a year ago.
More than a year ago.
Yeah. And then the other time was like a month ago. And so I finally went to pick up both guns at the same time a couple weeks ago.
So they were sitting down there, and he won it through Pass It On Outdoor Mentors, who we've had on the show numerous times. He goes and picks it up, tells me about it. And then the next day, Mike Christensen called me because I had wanted to set up some sort of thing where Mike comes and we record giving them to Austin, but he just ruined that all by actually going and picking up guns. So what was the first gun?
Oh,
you haven't even looked at it yet, have you?
They were both, they're both 20 gauge semi-autos.
Okay.
One is a TriStar something something.
I think they're both TriStar.
And the other one, it might be a TriStar as well.
They're
I don't remember.
20 gauges?
Both 20 gauges. Yeah. I know I looked them up and they were decent guns. I don't remember exactly what model it is.
So I know you have a plan with the second of those two guns you won. You want to talk about that?
So actually, I kind of have a plan for both, maybe.
First one you're going to give to me because I don't have a 20 gauge.
No. Yeah. No, I don't have another 20 gauge. This is the first 20 gauge I have. So I'm excited about that because when we were at the Bust a Clay fundraiser for Pass It On Outdoor Mentors, Rob from Ron Scherer Productions was down shooting with us, and he was shooting with a 20 gauge.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And so I was like, that is brilliant. I'm going to take one of the 20 gauges I got out and do some target shooting with it and see what I think, because that would be a whole lot easier on my shoulder after shooting a couple hundred rounds over a weekend than my 12 gauge, which by the time I get done with Bust a Clay, like I'm sitting there like ready to pull the trigger in suspense, like, and just not wanting to pull the trigger because I know it's going to recoil and hit my shoulder and it's going to hurt. And it's just, it's, I mean, I sound like a baby, but it's painful.
Sure. No, you at some point, you need to shoot my over under because A, it's shorter and it's unbelievably light. And B, at least your semi-auto is using a little bit of the recoil to get the mine just straight into the shoulder.
Yeah.
I found that starting the day with the butt resting pretty much in the center of my shoulder, as the day goes on, if I move it slightly up so the bottom of the butt is around the top middle of my shoulder, I do much better. And bonus, my cheek doesn't hurt from...
Yeah,
but
so the other one, though, I may take one and see about using it for myself for target shooting. The other one will probably end up being my son's shotgun. He's only like 2.5.
Too early so for
it's
now.
Gonna take a while,
but yeah.
But 20 gauge, maybe if I come across a 410 sometime, 410 probably better to start out with.
I'm sure.
But once he's able to actually go out and hunt a CRP field with me,
right,
it'd be better to be shooting a 20 gauge, so it'll probably end up his.
Are you gonna get another hunting dog? Because Saddle can't. Well, could saddle
hunt?
Yeah.
Oh, she would if I took her out. I won't. She's been retired for a couple years, and actually I haven't told you this, she had a seizure yesterday.
Oh no.
Like started shaking and like hit her head against the wall, and then Jenny went over, and I feel kind of bad because Jenny was recording a picture or recording a video of her. Uh-huh. So I have a video of it, but she was like seizing with her eyes open, so it's creepy looking. But then when she came to, like, she was freaked out. But that, with that, I mean, she's 13 years old.
Yeah.
I don't think she has much time left anyways,
right?
But with what she's going through right now, I don't think that even playing a whole lot of fetch in the backyard is in her
future.
Good idea. So.
Yeah, sure. But when she came to, she was freaked out. She bite her?
No.
Right. Just growl at her or something?
No.
Oh.
Just wasn't really sure where she was at, what was going on, was like moving her paws around, and then just moved super, super slow the rest of the day.
Yeah, I was asking, did Jenny bite Saddle?
Oh, yes. No. Luckily, this time, Jenny didn't.
You were able to stop her in time. And then Yam is certainly no hunting dog.
I don't know. Yam's mom and dad, I wouldn't necessarily say are hunting dogs, but they're killers.
Sure. But they're not. It's not going to bring something back to you and give it to you.
You can train that to an extent.
Sure. Not a soft. Can you train soft mouth? I wonder if you can.
Yeah.
You can.
To an extent. I mean, some dogs are just going to have a better proclivity towards it.
Yeah.
But you can definitely train it. I would say Yam has a soft mouth. She's picked up all kinds of stuff around the house. She had one thing the other day. It was my wife and I were putting a bench together. She picked up a piece of the wood and you could tell she was moving it all around in her mouth. She ran off with it, wouldn't come back. I'm like, great. When we get this back, it's going to be covered in bite marks.
Right.
Not a thing on it.
Oh, so that's cool then.
Yeah.
We're going to have Ron Boheme from the Hunting Dog Podcast on at some point. Because I'm sure tons of questions and anything to do with dogs, obviously I'm down for.
Yeah.
My dogs, if you look at them, have jaws. Like the jaw muscles of Riggins specifically are just freaky to look at. He'd snap your arm if you wanted to with those ridiculous teeth. All right. So we talked gun, what you're going to do with those guns. You're not going to give one to me.
No.
We need to come up with some sort of bet through Meatgistics, live stream, this podcast, all that stuff, and go down to Michael Murphy's and have it out.
We can do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
You laughed like.
I kind of laughed because we both said we were going to take like a day off and go do something fun after we were done with the website.
Yeah.
But I feel like we're not done with the website.
We're not done with the website.
Even though the website's live.
Like, no, absolutely.
We're not are still fighting too many issues. But at some point here, yeah, that would be fun. We just have to, I don't want a salt gun shot to the neck or anything because I can see you proposing that. But
so
we could do something as a wager.
I have an alternate proposal.
No.
We've got.
No. Like I told you, I got a bad heart. You might just put me into cardiac arrest if you zap me.
We'll just hit you again with it.
No.
It'll restart it. It's science, Austin.
It'll work.
No, but this podcast won't come out until, because we got an extra one in the bag. So it'll be 2 weeks from now. But hopefully at that point, we resolved the issues. For some updates, we finally got coupon codes working as we at least think they should. The sales page is working. It's just showing the sale price. It's not showing the difference. Like it's not going to show the regular price and then the sale price right now, at least. It's just showing what the reduced sales price is. And the big issue right now is configurable products, which are, for example, a knife that's the exact same, but we have six different colors on it. We have one product page for that and a drop down with selections for the colors. All of a sudden yesterday, those just stopped working. And we say yesterday because that's when we found it. I mean, it's not like I'm going every day and checking configurable products to see if they're working.
It would have been yesterday.
You think so?
Yeah, something like that wouldn't.
Okay.
I mean, it might take a couple hours to get to us, but it wasn't days.
One of the really nice things was I had my weekly Meatgistics live stream yesterday. Patrick was up here with me. And after we had done a couple of things, we started just answering chats. And there were a bunch of people talking about that live 6121. And I, like from my account, logged in, took the exact product one of the customers said they were having. It worked fine on mine. I got other people in the chat saying it works, it works, it works, but it didn't work for these three guys. So I had already scheduled one of those guys to have him call me at the end of the day. He did. We got it figured out, you and I, mostly you. And then I was able to get it to the information, the other two guys. So it's a nice thing about all the live streams, all the everything we do is we have a very good and very valuable to us direct communication with our customers. It's a good way for us to keep in touch, make sure what we're doing is working, they like what we're doing.
Yeah, it's awesome just for the feedback. Yep. Just because it's instant feedback, it's people willing to provide their opinion. Sometimes it's just, hey, this is wrong. Sometimes it's, hey, I'd like to see this or that. Mm-hmm. So if you guys out there, anybody else has something you want to tell us, suggest to us, any feedback you have, we love to hear it. You can email us anytime at podcasts@waltonsinc.com.
We need to create live@waltonsinc.com too, so that people can email things specifically for the live stream.
Okay.
So I'll put in a ticket for that. But there are now five people in the media department. 5 years ago-ish, there really was no media department. It was you and your sister who, did she ever even really work here, or was she just brought in because she couldn't be left at home? I'm kidding, Allie.
Basically, yeah, it was just kind of a daycare system for her.
Pity.
I don't really think that she really did much ever.
We always liked to make her feel like she was contributing. That always gave me like a little warm glow in my heart. I was like, aw, we're doing something good for her.
Give her projects that I had already finished and she felt good about trying to work on. And then I would just switch my version in at the end.
Get it in?
No, I'm kidding.
Do you remember when we had her dig in the hole and fill in the hole? Her dig one hole and put it, the dirt, in another hole? And she did that for like 4 days.
I legitimately want to do that though. I joke with my wife all the time. She thinks I'm crazy. I've got like 3 acres at home. I've got enough room in the backyard that I could dig a pretty good hole.
Okay.
I want to rent like some massive tractor, go out there, dig as big of a hole I can one day, and then go out the next day and fill it back in. And then go dig another huge hole, and the next day after that, fill it back in. Just want to use some heavy equipment.
Oh, okay. You want to play with the equipment.
Yeah.
That's the reason. Okay. Yeah, for sure.
Using
holes. A digger sounds like an amazing amount of fun.
Have you ever heard of Blippi?
No.
Okay. It's a little kid show thing.
Oh,
he has a song about excavators.
Oh, really?
And it just makes me want to do it even more. And it's, if my wife hears this episode, she's going to freak out because she hates it.
She hates that song?
All those little kid songs you watch on YouTube, they get stuck in your head and the kids just want to watch them over and over and over and over. So I have this song, The Excavator, all stuck in my head at all times.
We'll have to find that and listen to it later.
Tangent.
No, that sounds awesome. My wife and I are talking about if we stay in our house, because I would love, we're on just under an acre and we have a good lot. Backs up to a pond, a tree line, and then we have a neighbor to our other side who's like almost on the backside of their house who we absolutely adore. But I want like 3 to 5 acres. Basically, I want to be able to set up an archery range. If I want to set up a backstop and a shooting range, that's what I want. I'm sick of being told I can't do things by the HOA. And I'm on the board. And so they're like, no, you can't do that. I'm like, well, who are you to tell me what I can do with my property? Especially now we've got this guy who just bought a bunch of lots and he's trying to build homes not up to the HOA at all. I'm like, hey. This is where you guys need to like start doing things.
Yeah.
But yeah, whatever. That was a tangent.
That whole thing is to, ideally, it's to protect home values.
Right.
So you don't come in and build a $50,000 house and then a $500,000 house and struggling on what are we doing with the area.
Here. You've failed miserably of that at Wichita. I've lived all over the country. I've never seen as many nice neighborhoods either backing up to or mixed in with like really nice houses, average houses, bad houses. Like the HOA program isn't working.
I'm not saying it works.
No, definitely doesn't.
But
definitely doesn't.
Yeah.
But, all right. Another interesting thing on in the pork market is pork processors appeal federal court's line speed ruling. And we talked about this previously.
I saw this one too. I didn't put it on my list, but yeah. I saw this one.
Well, so it's three major pork processors are taking their fight to continue slaughtering pigs without a limit on line speeds to the 8th U.S. Circuit Court. Quality Pork of Austin, Minnesota, Holstone Farms of Fremont, and Clemens Food Group of Hatfield. Basically, they're trying to say that the USDA has no right to tell them how quickly they can run their line. And I 1,000% agree with that, unless there is a legitimate safety concern of either the employees or of the food going out. And I assume those three processors would take that into account because injured employees, as you know, is a terrible pain in the butt.
Yeah.
And putting out bad product is going to kill your business.
Yeah, there's all kinds of other rules and regulations in place that businesses have to follow on how to provide a safe working environment. Mm. That if you can meet all those and you can be twice the speed as your competitor, you should be allowed to, because then you're going to be more efficient. You're going to be able to either one, make more money, or two, sell at a lower price and consumers will buy more because it's cheaper, or ideally both of those. You make more money and sell it at a lower price.
Yep.
But when you set a hard cap on something like that, it's just, it's impossible. And then everybody's treated the same. And that's not what, in my opinion, this country was built on. And I don't understand why does the meat industry just get singled out on something like this? They don't come to us as a distributor and a retailer and say, whoa, you aren't allowed to put out that many orders per person every day.
Right.
You can only do 10 orders per hour per person. Even if you can do 100, nope, we're not going to let you. They don't do that. It's silly. I don't understand, but I get partially upset about it just because it's the meat industry and mm-hmm. that is related to us.
I have two things to add to that. First, I was listening to the Tim Pool podcast, I think it was, and he was talking about they went locally to like farms around their area. And they said that the farmers were telling them that the USDA was intentionally slowing them down. Like, they are preventing us from being able to run at full speed and put as much meat as we could in the market. You have that JBS hack, prices going up. Like, for a long time, it's felt like there's been a movement in this country to get people to stop eating so much red meat.
Oh, definitely.
I have a couple of like absolute wacko theories on what that is that I play around in my head that I won't share here, because I'm sure listeners probably already think I have a crazy bone in my body. But that's been a stated goal. They think it's terrible for the environment. They think it's bad for your health. And they think it is just immoral, I guess. Mm-hmm. They want everyone to be vegetarians. I've said it plenty of times on this, Meatgistics, whatever. I have zero problem with vegetarians. If you want to be a vegetarian, that is awesome. If it works for your body type and your lifestyle and you feel better doing it, great. Go ahead. It is not for me. It's not something I'm interested in at all. And I'm never pushing vegetarians to start eating meat again. They're always pushing on us to stop eating meat. And it drives me nuts.
Yeah, those two different sides of ideology and opinions and people in general, that's typically how it operates, in my opinion, is one side is okay with people doing whatever, and the other side is like, no, this is how you have to do it. It's a matter of control.
Yes.
It all comes down to, no matter if it's being a vegetarian or mm-hmm. eating meat, or if it's how fast you can produce product on a meat fabrication line. It all just comes down to control. It doesn't matter what control it is. They just want control.
Yeah. I'm starting to like kind of relook at how I see our entire society. I'm not so much looking at things as left and right anymore, because I see larger portions of the right becoming populist. And that is classically, at least in my mind, always been what people, at least to the left of the center, have. But I think on the extremes of both of those, the left and the right, you have authoritarians. I think I honestly see it more as authoritarians and freedom-loving people.
Yeah.
I really do think that's how I'm seeing it now. And you know the horseshoe theory?
So no.
You have a line over here, you have far left wackos, over here you have far right wackos. Well, you bend it like a horseshoe, eventually they're basically going to touch. They're basically saying the same things. I mean, you have far right people who are, I don't know how far we want to go into this, but like spouting off disgusting racist nonsense about people shouldn't be together. You hear that stuff on the far, far left now too. They're only saying it from a different perspective. But hey, you guys are saying the same thing. You might want to look in the mirror and be like, maybe I've taken too far. And if you're some sort of wacko neo-Nazi or something, you definitely need to re-look at how you're living your life.
Yeah, I like the description you gave of kind of the authoritarian, because that's what I see in like the control aspect to it, and then the freedom side, because that's where I always go back to is, I mean, we're a country that's based upon freedom, having freedom to do this, to do that, and it feels like we lose a lot of it. I don't really care if we talk left or right ideology. I, at the end of the day, I want freedom. Mm-hmm. And that's I think what we lose with like the USDA coming in and saying this is the maximum you can do, and then a judge going, yep, that's it. It's like, how, how did you get the power to do that? And you didn't, and businesses don't have the freedom to innovate and be faster, get better at stuff.
Probably a judge who has no experience in meat processing too. So doesn't have any experience, no expertise, and is just listening to whoever. I don't know if judges get lobbied. They probably don't. I hope they don't.
They shouldn't. Do they? I bet they do. Are you kidding me? Have you seen some of the circuit judges out there?
Yeah. Yep. What's the ninth or the 11th?
It's the ninth.
It's the ninth. All right. So moving on a little bit, there's an article in Meeting Place about increased automation in plants. One of the phrases that's been become popular in the last couple of years is the Internet of Things. These are your home, Nest, thermostat,
yeah, smart your speakers. Lights,
smart speakers, all of those, almost all, well, a lot of them operate on Bluetooth technology, and Bluetooth is not the most secure of technologies. So people do weird things like hack into people's systems through those and, you know, hopefully just turn on and off the lights. But once, as we've seen recently, once they get a foot in the door, they are then in the door, and it's easier for them to get into more sensitive information, more sensitive areas. And that's one of the concerns with more automation in meat processing plants. On the heels of this JBS attack, they're obviously thinking hard about this. So they're trying to warn these medium to large size plants that are starting to use increased automation that, hey, you got to take your cybersecurity super seriously. Do you know what the number one way people hack into systems is?
By stealing user credentials and phishing.
Okay. Maybe it's the number two way.
Okay. What do you think?
I thought it was the number one way.
I don't know for sure. I feel like I have some knowledge in here, but I don't know. I don't have statistics to back it up.
So it's social engineering. They'll take a thumb drive and drop it right in front of the door to some business that they want access to. Somebody, more likely than not, is going to pick that up and stick it into their computer to see what's on it. And then that's it. You're in.
Yeah, that's been one of the things, at least here for years, I've always harped on people. You do not use external media unless you got it from us. And if you think you need to use something, or you got it from even a customer, a vendor, anybody, anything, it goes through IT first.
I remember when we first got the 32 millimeter sausage tire. It came with a little mini CD.
Yeah.
And two people here loaded it into a small disk drive to read it. And I just happened to be mentioning it to you, like I was not telling on them, and you, that might be the maddest I've ever seen you.
Yeah, because that's directly against company protocol. Yeah, and that is how you take down a whole network like that.
Yeah.
Because there's stuff that once you're actually in the system, past the firewalls, past all the security on the front, if you get to a workstation like that, it's done. You have access to anything and everything.
That's crazy.
We'd end up being just like JBS, be having to restore our entire system off of backups.
So I talked about this on one of the live streams recently. I think it was before you were in on the big one. I don't know if JBS paid or not, but what they should have done is not paid and said, hey guys, whoever these people are who did this are the reason your meat prices are skyrocketing. Nobody tells who these people are. People know. Like, there are people who are not in that group that know that it's that group that did it. They have no desire, no motivation, no reward for turning on them. If you get 300 million Americans pissed off about the price of their meat, then just throw them to the wolves. So something that I found pretty interesting, and I looked on some labels in my house for it, but titanium dioxide is now being considered unsafe. Now, that's not an additive that most people are going to be familiar with. It is used in like starbursts, lots of jelly beans, basically really bright colored candies. And I guess it's used as a coloring agent, but mostly to bring like the color closer to a pure white so that then adding the other food colorings can be more accurate, which sounds like just a ridiculous thing to do. But titanium's like the sixth most common mineral found in the Earth's crust, and it normally interacts with oxygen. It makes titanium oxides, which are nothing to worry about at all. But apparently titanium dioxide can cause some breakdown and mutations in cells. So just another great example of look at your labels on what you're eating. And I mean, I know some people are probably going to say, well, there's sodium bisulfate in some of your seasonings or some Excalibur seasonings. Yeah, there's a world of a difference between a sodium derivative and something with titanium in it.
I don't know, but even weird things in small quantities, the human body still needs to survive and it doesn't hurt. I mean, humans are supposed to eat and ingest small amounts of iron.
Right.
I mean, so anything there could be okay for you in the right quantity. Anytime I see something like this where it's like, hey, this is bad for you, that is bad for you. I don't know if this is a true statement or not. So don't hold me to this. This is an example.
We just talked.
But it would be like Mountain Dew causes cancer. Okay, well, maybe it does if you drank 50 cans of Mountain Dew a day. Yep. Cancer is the last thing you probably have to worry about. There's a lot of other things that you're going to have problems with. So it's all everything in moderation.
Sure.
If titanium dioxide is in candies and it's been shown that it's not good for you, okay, maybe just don't eat as much candy. Maybe it's not it truly being entirely bad, but it's if you're eating 5 candy bars a day, that's the issue.
I think the real reason that there was push behind this one, because it does seem to be more in candies that are targeted towards children, like Skittles, Starburst, jelly beans. Those are more like the real bright colored ones that kids would reach for. So
berries and what else? Berries and cream. Oh, huzzah.
For anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, look up Starburst commercial berries and cream. It is the best commercial ever, second best commercial ever made. Nothing will beat Truhone. The Truhone. It's my absolute favorite. Then one last one I have, which is just some North Carolina county banned Coca-Cola machines because they didn't like Coke coming out with their political stances. Now, I tend to agree. I wish companies wouldn't do so much to make their political views known. I realize the irony of me saying that on a podcast that mostly we talk about more conservative things, but we're not Coke. That just seems, I'm sorry, it seems stupid to me.
It's all stupid.
We don't like your politics, so we're going to ban your soft drink from being sold in vending machines in our it seems like a attention grabbing. Thing.
Yeah. To me, this kind of goes back to what we talked about before, about whether it's left or right, whoever's doing whatever, at the end of the day, it should be about freedom. And why, like, if the left does something to somebody on the right and it makes them mad, which Coca-Cola did, and then the right does something to somebody on the left to try to make them mad, why did any of it all happen in the first place? No.
Yeah, an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind.
Coca-Cola should be free to have their stuff wherever. If you don't like it, you shouldn't have, government shouldn't be the one that's saying.
Right. Then you personally can choose not to buy that. You don't take away other people's access to it.
Yeah, everybody ought to have the freedom of choice to go drink Coca-Cola if you want.
Totally agree.
Me personally, Coca-Cola is a lot better than Pepsi. So
it's not even remotely close. Do you know the story behind the Pepsi challenge in the 80s?
Huh.
So you've heard the term the Pepsi challenge?
No.
Oh.
I have no idea what we're talking about.
Yes? Yeah. They both know. Okay. So Pepsi used to do this thing called the Pepsi challenge where they would show up to like a mall, certain grocery stores, anything like that. And they'd have some Pepsi and some Coca-Cola with them. And they'd have these little like 1 ounce little plastic cups, and they'd pour some Pepsi and they'd pour some Coke, and they'd ask people which one they preferred. Some ungodly number preferred Pepsi, right? And there was a bunch, and I learned about this when I was in high school, so I might be getting some of the details wrong. But they had estimated that Pepsi was going to overtake and dominate the market till there would be no Coca-Cola by like 1990 something or other. That didn't happen at all. Coke is still number one. And the reason is that Pepsi's a much sweeter product. I mean, Coke has, you know, a kind of a deeper taste. It's got like some raisin taste in it. Like, it's got more going on. So in small amounts, like a little shot almost, Pepsi tasted better. But when you're actually drinking a whole glass of it, people still prefer Coca-Cola.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Either way, in my opinion, they both suck, and they lose to Dr. Pepper and Mountain Dew. But
so Diet Dr. Pepper, in my mind, is the closest tasting diet soda to the regular soda.
Yeah,
like
I agree.
It's not as good as regular Dr. Pepper, but it's close. It's close. I drink more Diet Coke. Actually, I drink more Diet Canadian or Canada Ginger Ale. Canadian Dry? What is it called? Canada Dry. Thank you. I drink more of that than anything else, but I can't even drink a regular Coke anymore.
Yeah, I don't.
Leaves a film on my mouth. Yeah, right. I think it's mostly diet. Yeah, or Coke Zero. I will say this. A couple of months ago, I was dying of thirst, and the Diet Dr. Pepper was out back there. So I got a regular Sprite, and oh my God, was that so good. I even think I was a little like jazzed from it after. I was like, whew, yeah. All that sugar.
I can't even drink regular Sprite because like it's something about me maybe, but when I drink it, it fizzes up so bad, I will like regurgitate all of it.
Do you have like a little acid reflux normally?
I don't know. It will all come back up as just straight up foam. Like
you'll throw it up?
Uh-huh. Yeah. It doesn't hurt. Doesn't even, it's not even uncomfortable. It's actually kind of cool. It's a cool party trick. But if I drink regular Sprite, yeah, like it'll go down. It'll sit there for a second and I will just burp up a whole pile of foam.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Since we're at the end of the podcast and anyone who doesn't like us has already stopped listening, about 2 months ago, my wife finished her MBA and we had a party for everybody who was in there and their loved ones. And I never smoke anymore, but this one guy that my wife was teamed up with in like two different things, he and I got real friendly. And anytime they'd come over to study,
I'm kidding.
Anytime they'd come over to study, he would go out and smoke cigarettes. I'd take the dogs out because I still like the smell of cigarettes. Don't smoke anymore, but I still like the smell of cigarettes. And I kept telling him, like, when you guys are done, we're having a party and I'm going to smoke cigarettes. So smoked a bunch of cigarettes that night, drank probably too much, and I was hungover the next day. I honestly think it was more from the cigarettes than from the drinking, because I didn't drink that much. But I kept just throwing up, and it sucked. It hurt. It was terrible. And then finally, I ate a really nice amount of I think it was the Bluebell birthday cake ice cream.
Oh.
That felt amazing to throw up. It felt so good. It was incredible. Like, it was a great taste. It was soothing on my throat. I'm like, oh my God, anytime I'm sick in the future, I'm just going to eat some of that. It was a pleasure to throw up.
I'm going to have to tell my wife that, because she just, whoops, my phone's going off.
Yeah, I hear it.
My wife struggles so much through pregnancy with throwing up. Like, it's bad. This pregnancy that we're in right now, the only reason in my opinion, that we're better off than the last one is because we know more about it. Sure. And so we can do more ahead of time, but still it's every day she has issues. She normally doesn't want to eat anything, but I'm just going to have to tell her next time that she's like about to throw up, you need to go just shove ice cream
You'll
down your throat
you will
and
love
give it.
It
a try.
Yep.
Because it sounds delicious.
It was absolutely pleasant.
You get to eat it twice.
No.
Taste it twice.
Taste it twice. Do not eat it again. That would be bad.
Yeah. Not like my dog threw up the other day on the wood floor. And I shouldn't share all this, but I'm going to. when she puked it up, like it was, she didn't have like enough liquid with it. So it was like all chunk, like hard chunk of dog food, but it was in the shape of a log. it looked like she pooped on our living room floor.
Okay.
But it was just regurgitated dog food, but it got pushed into a log going through her esophagus. That's and coming out. It's just these logs of dog food everywhere. It was creepy.
When Riggins throws up, I have to literally go with a shovel or something and pick it up and throw it out, because otherwise he knows it's out there and he can't calm down. Like, he tries to get by me at the door, and if I let him, he'll just sprint right to it and eat it. And he just loves eating his own vomit. So
it's weird.
He's a disgusting dog. All right, you got anything else?
That's all I got.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you checking us out. Leave us a review if you listen on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, any of those. Or leave us a comment and a like if you're watching on YouTube.
Cool. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for checking out the Meatgistics podcast. To shop everything but the meat, head on over to waltonsinc.com. And to get your meat processing questions answered by experts and enthusiasts alike, head on over to our online community at meatgistics.com. Waltons, everything but the meat.